Radio Pulpit, 657 AM, your daily companion.
Tune in. Grow in faith. Radio Pulpit, 657 AM.
It's Healthy Lifestyle Awareness Month, so we're talking women's health and obesity. Now, according to the South African Demographic and Health Survey, nearly 68% of women in the country are either overweight or obese. And to have that discussion with this afternoon is none other than Dr. Ntshalati Mathebula, who's part of the Wellbeings Africa Medical Advisory Panel. Dr. Ntsha, good afternoon and welcome back.
Good afternoon, Luko. It's good. It's lovely to be back. And hello to your listeners.
I must say this hits a sore spot because I certainly fall within that 68% there. I must be somewhere there.
But I must say that we have like settled well in the year, and most people have done their yearly goals, and most of people's yearly goals are usually the weight loss.
Yep.
So I hope that yours is also part of that. I have also tried to stay disciplined and be intentional about it, to stay just active and fit so that I stay energetic, and I've been feeling energetic and I'm loving it.
Oh, no, listen, for me, I told my sister I was going to do it this year, but I think, I don't know if I told you this last year, I've been unwell for the longest time. So when I eat, I get nauseous, and I'm now banking on that. But today we went to buy my dad's graduation regalia. She looked at my face and she said, "Why are you having a breakout?" I looked at her, "I don't know." And she said, "It's all the sweet things you're eating." So I guess I've now got to embark on the journey already. It's going to help me somehow.
It's only the second month of the year. No, we need to get you going. Okay, perhaps after this conversation, you will have a change of mind about it. Let's hope so.
Definitely. Now, Dr. Ntshalati, when we talk about obesity, many people think it's just about appearance. But what is obesity really, from a health perspective?
Yes. So according to the Lancet Diabetes and Endocrinology Committee, so they say that obesity is defined as a health condition. So I think this conversation will start feeling better for people who will be listening and feel like, oh, obesity is about overeating, like sugar, like your dad said to you. But it's really a health condition. It's really not about an appearance issue. What we call obesity is the person has excess body fat weight. You might look big sometimes, but you find that when we count your fat, is actually not too bad. Mm. And also, if then what we call obesity is when the excess body fat that is there now start disrupting the normal function of organs and tissues. So yes, obesity is not just about like body size. It is about excess body fat and how that fat affects the body biologically. So excess fat can affect multiple organs, including your heart, the liver, the pancreas, reproductive system, the joints. So what I want to define it well is, like, according to also the Lancet Diabetes Committee, they want to classify it as a preclinical diabetes, obesity, preclinical obesity or clinical obesity, meaning that when you're preclinical obese, yes, when we measure you, you are having that excess fat, but it's actually not affecting you. What we call that is that you're at risk of having all those conditions. But those who are having clinical obesity are those that are having the excess fat, and when we measure the fat, is also affecting their function, their limitation to their daily function. There is organ dysfunction, making it an active disease. Then now we call it the disease itself. So if I had to define it well, I'd say obesity is a chronic medical illness in which excess body fat directly causes harm to the body system. Appearance may be what people notice, but the health impact is what defines obesity clinically.
Very interesting, I must say, because we always think we know what it is, hence we use it so loosely, hey? But tell me, doctor, what's behind this rise in the statistics, and why is obesity so common now?
Yeah, so the rise is really not primarily due to an individual's failure or a lack of willpower.
Okay.
People are trying, eh?
They
Every gen, people, you see a lot of people at the gym. Jan, Feb, the gym is so packed. So it's really not about people not trying. They are really trying. Sometimes it's really driven by complex, interactive, biological and environmental and societal factors. So I must say that now our environment has become what we call an obesogenic environment. So what that means is that the environment, yes, promotes you to gaining weight more, mm-hmm. but it makes it hard for you to maintain the healthy weight. So some of the factors are the biology itself can work against us. So the body is meant to protect the fat stores because it's trying to prevent you from going into a hunger strike, mm-hmm. and then now you die. So it's sort of protecting you. So when you even try to lose a weight, you try to go to gym, you'll find that at some point you feel like, oh, the weight is just remaining the same. It's because the body is trying to protect you. You maybe you're fasting now. We just came from January. People were doing for 21 days fast, but they will then weigh themselves and feel like, oh, the weight is still the same. Yeah. It's because the body was trying to protect the fat cells. So sometimes it is the biology that is working against us. But I think the most common thing would be the food environment has changed. Now we are more in an ultra processed food era. The food is cheap, it's highly palatable. There is energy dense food rather than nutrient rich fruit food, which makes it more that people have, like they eat a lot of food because mm-hmm. the energy ones, it just makes you, it gives you that energy for now, but it really doesn't sustain it.
Oh.
Another factor could be like your sedentary lifestyles. You know, our works are just behind our desk job, except for me. I work, my steps every day is more than 10,000. I'm running around. So yeah, so most people's jobs, like now we are in an AI world, computer IT world, so everyone's just behind their desk.
Sure.
And yeah, more screen time, people are not outside, we are all on Netflix and less walking. And also chronic stress and poor sleep, like the environment is just so stressful, the work life. So if you're stressing more, there's cortisol that is being released, which then promotes fat stores as well. And if you're not sleeping more, it means that if you always just want to eat, you're awake, your hunger hormones are high, and you feel full less because you are just never like resting and sleeping. So basically, yeah, that is about why it's becoming more common than before.
As you're speaking, Dr. Nshalati, I'm thinking really, we're such a technological world. And if we ever asked what we prefer, we definitely prefer to sit down and work from home. I mean, since 2020, it's been quite a famous thing. Work from home, work from home. And we don't ever think actually about what that has on our fitness. Rarely do you find people say, I work from home, but first I go to the gym. Or it's those who work from home would rather not leave home most of the time.
Yeah, very true.
Sad.
I must say, I would also want that job, that kind of a job, because sometimes I feel like, you know, the 1,000 steps every day, they're just so hectic. So I'd really appreciate that job. But for now, it's working for me because I'm achieving the goals. But I hear you. I think that's correct. If we could do some form of research, people would really prefer calmer jobs where they're just sitting down, and that has effects. I mean, we are at 68% of women who are obese now.
Now let's talk about how obesity affects a woman's health. How does it affect it?
So when we started, we talked about how excess fat can affect many parts of the body. But now if we had to tailor it to a woman without looking at other system, I mean, the reproductive system is central to the woman's health, and obesity has a big impact here. So it can cause irregular periods, affect their fertility, increase the risk of a pregnancy and complications like high blood pressure as well, diabetes and also difficult labor. So these effects on women's reproductive health are especially important considering the burden of women's diseases. So we're already overwhelmed with so many diseases that affect women. So if obesity is something that impacts on those diseases, then it's something that we really need to understand. So I lead a community, and when we started the year, I was just like sharing with them about a women's health vision board, that many of these diseases about that affect women can really be managed if we lost a bit of weight. So mm-hmm. you wouldn't have to worry about that, how you're not falling pregnant or how you're getting these cancers, because now your risk is now low. So if people had to choose to say that I'm going to actually lose the weight, then less of this risk would affect them, or less of these problems would really impact them.
Look, I'm glad you're having this conversation with me, somebody who struggled with weight for the longest time. Sometimes I get it right, sometimes I don't. But as you're speaking, you know, I always say, I want us to have grace for overweight people because I've been there. Yet at the same time, I want us to have these conversations because the reality is that it may indeed affect issues such as conception. You made mention of reproductive health, women's reproductive health. But let's go to it straight so that we don't run around it. Is it really true that obesity can also impact a woman's ability to get pregnant?
Okay, so obesity can make it harder for a woman to get pregnant because the extra fat isn't just stored energy, it actually affects the hormones. So the whole conversation about obesity and fertility is about the alteration to the hormones. So the fat that is, like we said, obesity is excess fat. So when there's excess fat, it means that you are producing extra estrogen. Oh. So that estrogen now then disrupts your normal signals from the brain to the ovaries. So normally when you have to ovulate every month, there are certain hormones that are released from the brain to signal your ovaries so that they are able to release that egg and you ovulate. Mm. So now if the estrogen is already high in your body, so those hormones in the brain, they are sensing that you're actually, okay, it means it's fine. We don't need to come. You're already ovulating and it's not the case. Oh. So now it ends up disrupting that ovulation system. And now you start having your irregular periods, or you stop having periods altogether. So another factor is that obesity, the excess fat causes insulin resistance. That's why most people who are obese will be a diabetic. So it causes insulin resistance, which then now when you are becoming insulin resistant, there's like male hormones in the body contributing to conditions like polycystic ovarian syndrome, which also goes back to you not having irregular periods or not menstruating at all. So on top of that, when we also talk about this excess fat, it causes chronic inflammation that then affects the quality of the egg. If maybe you are ovulating, but then the quality of your egg and also the lining of the womb where the egg has to implant, now it's also impacted because of that chronic inflammation from the fat. So that's why we always say, go ahead and lose a little of weight and you'll see you'll fall pregnant, and people will feel like, oh, I'm undertreated because why did I leave home to go early to the hospital and they just told me to go and lose some weight and come back after six months. It's the reality. We have to start there before we can actually introduce you to some medical treatment that can influence you or help you to actually fall pregnant.
Yeah, very interesting, I must say. And I think, like I said, as much as we need to give grace, we need to have these conversations. Because I think if a lot of us also understood the repercussions us being unhealthy have, then we would rethink the decision of actually not taking care of our health. I know it's sad. It seems as if we're blaming. But like I said, I'm glad I'm having this conversation because I have to check myself as well.
Yes, yeah, we need to just give people grace. Mm. I think even healthcare workers, we also have to be trained on how to actually deal with the obese people when they come in. Because I can imagine if we had to do a study now in every obese person that has ever been into a hospital and just ask them about their experience in the hospital, how did they feel stigmatized? Because you can hear the reactions of people talking, like we're talking that this thing is difficult, like maybe we're performing a cesarean section and we're just like struggling, like we are cured this fat, you know. I really think we also need training in that sense to say that when this kind of people come in, how are we going to counsel them to actually trust us if we already are the first line that is already showing them the stigma? What more with the community if you're getting the stigma in the hospital? So I really think we have to show some grace. I mean, like we explained, it's not about lack of willpower.
Yeah.
It's just an overwhelming thing altogether. And it's also not about a full plate only.
Yeah.
There's a lot of aspects.
I'm glad I was out when I gave birth. I was under GA. So, hey, I'm glad I didn't hear those conversations. Anyway, Dr. Jelati, what about diseases? Is there a connection between obesity and cancers that affect women?
Definitely. So if we had to speak of the cancers that affect women, the ones that are more common and impacting on women's health more, or very common also in South Africa, is breast cancer and endometrial cancer. So what happens is the same as I was explaining, that when you have excess fat, there's high estrogen. So the estrogen is always a problem. And also the insulin resistance also comes back, and also the inflammation. I think one thing that listeners have learned today is that excess fat, when there's excess fat, there's a hormone that is high that is called estrogen, and also there is insulin resistance, and also there is in chronic inflammation that occurs. So those things are the ones that impact end up causing the people, the woman, to have cancer, because now it will affect the lining of the womb inside and also affect the breast cells, ending up causing the cancers and even causing the tumor to even grow more. So it is also studied that endometrial cancer, so if you are obese, you have about 2 to 10 times higher risk as compared to someone who has normal weight. And also they've also looked at all the cancers that are endometrial cancers, and they've checked that actually 50% of these women, more than 50% of these women with endometrial cancer are actually obese. So there is a direct relation to obesity and endometrial cancers. Even if they don't reach that stage of cancer, most of them will end up coming with abnormal bleeding. If they are postmenopausal, we'll call that postmenopausal bleeding. They'll come in with this bleeding. They don't understand what's happening, but it's because of the weight. So one thing I want to also highlight, I think I've mentioned it just now, that yes, we understand that we can be able to make the diagnosis of the cancers and also highlight all other risks. But one thing is, it's also difficult to manage the patients. So it's not about only our reactions when we are managing them, but it is actually difficult. The anesthesia risk, if we had to do a cesarean section, I will need 2 extra people that need to assist me, because we need to pull, the tummy up. We need special equipment for them. It's just always when we do the sonar, we can't really see well what's happening inside because of the fat. So yes, we can pick up all these diseases, but there has to be something that you understand, that the complications for you as a person who has excess fat is much more higher as compared to someone with normal weight. Your risk of infection is high. Your risk of anesthesia complication is high. So it is quite a deep, complex condition.
I'm glad you're really making mention of this, Dr. Nchalati, because I think it's making us reflect as well to say, I might not be prone to these risks or think I am, but at the end of the day, I make things complicated for myself as well if I'm not good. Because what I'm trying to encourage is, let's be actively involved in making sure that we manage our weight better as well. Like you said, it's not always a situation where you can say it's self-inflicted, but there is definitely a healthier lifestyle that we can choose for ourselves.
Yes, definitely.
Now, tell me, how does obesity impact mental health and self-esteem in women?
So yes, like we have mentioned, that it affects the physical health, reduced your physical activity, basically, and your functioning daily. So it's not only the physical health that will be affected. I think mental health talks are a lot. And I think at Wellbeings, you have a lot of questions, conversations about mental health and self-esteem. So women with obesity may feel judged and stigmatized, which can lower their confidence, and they end up having stress and anxiety or depression, and causes them to end up having also social withdrawal, and making them it's harder for them to stay engaged in daily life. So emotional stress may lead to unhealthy coping behaviors, creating a cycle that affects both mental and physical health. So that's why addressing mental health and supporting self-esteem is just as important as managing the weight itself.
Just had a light bulb moment here, or just a reflection moment, Dr. Nchalati. You know, you were speaking about insulin, being insulin resistant. I had a conversation a number of years ago about that. And it actually reminded me that every time I was more overweight, I would randomly have a darker neck. But whenever I'd go on a weight loss program, I would always find that my skin clears and whatnot. And you know, there are many times where I've proven that leading a healthier lifestyle actually changes fortunes for me. For instance, when I gave birth to the twins, I had high blood pressure. And I had it for quite a while thereafter, probably 8 months after. I remember going to a different doctor, not my own doctor, because I didn't want her picking up that the pressure was still there. Because she had said, if you still have it 6 months postpartum, then chances are we're going to need to put you on medication. I ran to another doctor and I didn't tell him that. And then one day I went for my Depo-Vera, and the sister said, ma'am, it's been a while since you gave birth. Your pressure is still high. And I decided that day, I was like, you know what? Let me go try eat healthier. I didn't lose a lot of weight, I'm going to be honest, post that. But the next time I went, 3 months later, my blood pressure was perfect. So you know, that's the benefit sometimes when we are reactionary to these things, because you can change your fortunes. High blood pressure, I've heard people who say, look, at some point I was diabetic, but even my doctor was like, hey, you're clear. But we always think, oh no, because it's hereditary. No, look, my mommy had it. That's it. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah. What do you think makes people actually like stop? If you can see that it really worked for you, mm-hmm. What makes you then stop that thing? What do you think makes people stop?
I'm gonna be doing honest. I'm gonna be honest with you. I think just generally, Dr. Nchalati, leading a healthier lifestyle is difficult. I think sometimes, I had a friend of mine who was diagnosed with diabetes when she was 16, I think, or even younger. She used to say, you know, sometimes you get so tired of having all these rules that you become rebellious. I think sometimes we just become rebellious out of the blue because it's not an easy thing. And you watch people eating everything they want and they're okay. And you're like, Aibo, why must it be me?
Yeah, but I think also you need a community, what I can say. You shouldn't do this and isolate yourself. You need a community to support you. You know, I'm like part of a community where we're just sending steps every day. We send our workouts, and like it's keeping you in check, because you know that I've only done two. Someone is already the ninth. They've done seven workouts for more than 30 minutes already. So community. So I think the biggest factor that I would say, yes, it's hard, but I really think people struggle with discipline. So discipline is just the biggest thing that causes all of us to just stumble and not, because if you're not disciplined, then it's, so you have to, how you teach yourself discipline is you just look for something. I'm not like drinking water, for instance. Tell yourself that every day I'm going to drink water, and just be consistent. Maybe set an alarm for the next 21 days and see. So once you master discipline in one area, it's easier to then master discipline in everything else. True. So I think people must really want to be disciplined, then everything else will just fall in place. Because when you're disciplined, you forget about how this thing is hard. You have to do it even if it's hard. Even if there's discomfort, you know that I have to do it. True. I have to wake up and go run.
Okay. Lastly, before I run, if someone is obese, the starting point to get healthy may feel too difficult. We know that. So where do you even start?
Like we have been saying, that the idea of being obese or excess fat is really very overwhelming. So the starting point can seem too far away, and that alone can stop people from trying. So what I said to also my community, I was like, face the scale. So go and measure that excess fat. Are you actually having excess fat, or are you just a big body? Mm-hmm. So if you can't really afford to go and get that good scale that will give you that excess fat, that fat measurement, then you can like measure your waist circumference. Mm-hmm. So once you face it, you know the reality is, okay, I'm a woman, and my waist circumference is more than 80 centimeters. It means I'm obese. I have excess fat. Yeah. So I have to understand. So you have to face the problem. And one thing we have to highlight is that it's not a personal failure. People must know that you haven't failed. It's just complex. It's a chronic condition influenced by biology, by hormones, by environment, by life circumstances. And what I can say is that start small and be realistic, not with extreme diets or intense exercise. Then you won't be disciplined because now you're already overwhelming yourself. True. Start with small things, achievable changes that can help you start being disciplined, like improving your food choices, moving a little more, and getting medical support when needed. I think one thing I want to say, if we do not stigmatize people who are asthmatic, for instance, or who have tonsillitis, and maybe tonsillitis, they end up having to get a tonsillectomy, or you get asthma treatment, then why are we stigmatizing people who are obese? If the other things fail, physical activity fail, and you feel like, no, this thing is affecting my function, my organ function, my activity, then it means that you really do need medical treatment, and nobody should stigmatize you for that. If you need surgery for this obesity, for you to end up living a normal life, then you have to get it. So one thing I can also say again is that you don't have to do everything at once. If modest gradual changes can improve health and reduce the diseases and reduce diseases risk over time, then do those small changes.
Oh, Dr. Nchilati, thank you so much. Have a lovely one then.
Thank you so much, Luko.
And that was Dr. Nchilati. Now, as always, more health news and tips can be found at wellbeingsafrica.com. Plus, don't forget to sign up for the Wellbeings Habits Challenge 2026. Entry fee is absolutely zero. It's free. Just email hello@wellbeingsafrica.com. And yes, there is a big prize for one winner of a 5,000 Rand. Plus, you'll be featured on Wellbeings as we share your health journey story. Now, the person who wins is the one who shows the most health involvement in the 6 months. And we will be there each week guiding you through the process, says Wellbeings Africa. So go ahead and send your hello to wellbeingsafrica.com. It's hello@wellbeingsafrica.com. I've put my entry in, waiting for yours. Let's get on the challenge.
Uthandwa ngendlela ongasokuze uyiqonde. Khetha iRadio Pulpit 657 AM. Luthando olo.
Do you need prayer? Radio Pulpit, in collaboration with Need Prayer, is ready to stand in prayer with you. Contact us today with your prayer request at 012-334-1222 or WhatsApp us on 067-429-7564. You can also visit us on radiopulpit.co.za for your online prayer request. We will faithfully pray with you.
Many people across South Africa are being blessed and encouraged by the Radio Pulpit devotional magazine, The Word for Today. This publication places the gospel of Jesus Christ in the hands of more than 100,000 people every day, inspiring every person, from the professional businessman to the needy person who lives on the streets. Each edition contains daily scripture-based devotionals and inspiring articles to help you grow spiritually. The booklet is given with the compliments of Radio Pulpit, but your donation, large or small, will help us to print the next edition and continue being the hope of the gospel to a world in desperate need. The Word for Today. Get yours today on 012-334-1200 or subscribe online at www.radiopulpit.co.za. Radio Pulpit, your daily companion.
Words of truth and value. You'll find it on 657 AM. It's 657 AM, the sounds of your life.
You
and 657 AM and Life, a winning team on the road to eternity.